Hey, believer, welcome to From Head to Heart. Do you know in your head God loves you, but struggle to feel it in your heart? Have you ever been let down by people so you believe God will let you down too? Do you ever feel like you have to choose between God or your feelings? I'm Jessica, someone who loves Jesus but didn't grow up in the church. For a long time, I believed that if I didn't take care of myself, then no one would. I believed so many lies about my worth and identity in Christ. I wondered if I would ever be able to discern God's voice over my voice. I realized that even in my mistakes, with all the choices I made, I am still loved by a God whose love isn't transactional. Now is your time to finally know and understand God's love for you, that you can trust God and hear from God. If you are ready to grow your relationship with God and need a starting place to process your feelings, pull up a seat and join us at the table. Today is the first day you begin to challenge the way you think to change the way you live. I want to start off this podcast by saying I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what you're grieving right now. It could be the loss of a loved one recently, or it could be the loss of something that happened previously. We can lose all kinds of things that situations and friendships and marriages that we did not see ourselves having to grieve. Today, I'm joined by Lisa, and we're going to be talking about how to grieve the loss of a loved one and really processing through loss and how we don't have to listen to what other people are telling us to do and to feel, and how overwhelming sometimes it can be with opinions. And when people tell us that we should be over it by now, and even when they give us lies about the situation of, you know, even scripturally from heaven and situations, most importantly, I just want you to know that your pain is seen here. Your feelings matter because you matter to God. And you don't have to walk through this process of grieving alone. And I want you to know that you're not alone. Lisa is a widow and mom to 7 children. She's a founding member of the Widow Mama Collective. It's a Facebook community for young widows. She helps women find hope in the hard places of loss. I couldn't think of anybody better than to talk about the loss and navigating overwhelm, and really actually, what can people do? Like, how can we help those that are grieving as well? One of the things that I often talk about, especially in my book, Face Off With Your Feelings, is that your feelings matter because you matter to God, and you don't have to choose between God or your feelings right now. And I walk you through that in my book, Face Off With Your Feelings, that it's important that you recognize that God is both, and He wants you to go to Him with what you feel. He doesn't want you to choose your feelings and start to draw away. He wants you to go to Him. And so let's go to Him today, and let's go ahead and get to the interview. Lisa, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. And I think one of the first questions I really want to open up with is helping women, you know, listening, the listeners, process through loss and grief as a child of God and as a daughter of God. I think so many times we hear things like, well, shouldn't you be over it? And, you know, what about God? And shouldn't you have this perspective? And we have to choose, don't we? I know so many women think they have to choose between their feelings and their pain or God, or, you know, they feel like they're letting God down because they're still in pain and loss and the grief of loss. So can you just speak to that and how you began to walk through that?
Yes, I will say I was so grief naive. I really did not know what to expect, but God is a good teacher. And really the people around me were good. You know, it's so critical in grief. I always say that if we don't grieve on our terms now, grief is going to come back on its terms later. And that's what we don't want. We can't shush it away or mask it or fake like we're fine, even if we know our loved one is in heaven. And that there is some solace in that. There is some comfort in that, but that does not take away the very real pain that they're not here with us right now. So I think just allowing ourselves to feel that full range of emotion, as hard and as raw and as painful as it is huge. If we have to experience it, if we're going to process it, you know, that's a first step. We can't just self-medicate it away or shop it away or any of the things that we would do to try to lessen it. And then I think too, knowing that our emotions are safe with God, and they're not just safe, they're safest with God. You know, he never in the word, we never see him dismiss somebody's pain or turn them away. You know, we see all over in the Psalms, especially, but I think of Hannah, you know, in her infertility journey and her brokenness, just going to the temple and just laying it all before the Lord and just crying her eyeballs out and giving God her deepest longings.
I think that, you know, for so many of us, like you said, we kind of want to put it away as if it happened, hasn't happened yet. What, tell us about the moment that you kind of came to and you had that moment in your own life, you know, with your loss of your husband, that you realized that you didn't deal with grief yet.
Yeah, I think every day I realized that, honestly. And I thought that if we could just get through our first, you know, that year of first, that we would be okay, kind of I'd be on my feet. And I didn't realize that the second year would hurt so much. It was really almost harder in many respects because the fog of grief was gone and that soft landing was gone. And it was the reality every day that this is my life. But every day I would get up, I would write in my journal, this is too hard. I cannot do this. I was very much confronted with, there's no way I can fix my broken heart. I don't even know if I'll ever smile again. I'm overwhelmed by not only my emotions, but my fear, just all the decisions I'm having to make, all the things I'm having to handle in this. And it was just too much. And then on top of that, I had 7 children, and thinking about their hearts and what heavy, heavy grief they were carrying, and I couldn't fix it as a mom. That was hard.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the, I really want to talk about these, the things that hurt you in your grief from others and the things that helped you? I think that when somebody's hurting, we want to fix them because we don't want to see them in pain anymore. What were some things that we know we can, you know, take away as listeners, but also maybe some of the ones that are grieving are like, yes, okay, keep talking, Lisa, of the things that hurt and the things that helped.
Yes. I think the things that hurt the most were people who would say, call me if you need something, as if I was going to do that. And it didn't feel sincere, honestly. You know, there were people who were well-meaning who would say things that were hurtful. I even had like an older widow say to me, well, at least you have children. Now, she was hurting. She was also new to widowhood. And I knew the place it was coming from. She was extremely lonely in the house by herself. And yet her words to me were dismissed my children's real pain, because I would have loved for them to have been grown and have grown up with their dad. You know, and I had a 4-year-old and 6-year-old and on up to 19 who were just, you know, grieving the loss of their dad. So I think those questions, and then another one, what is, at least you can get married. You're young enough and can get married again. If we say this to anyone, at least you're young and you can have more children. At least you have, you know, all of these, again, dismiss the pain. I think the things that helped the most were people who just came in and were with me in it. Even that first day, they didn't shy away from the suddenness of it and the overwhelm of it. You know, when you have a family of 8 and they've lost somebody suddenly like that, it can almost paralyze you from stepping in because you can't fix all that pain. But man, people showed up. They brought food. Women came and started working in my kitchen. I had a friend that said, we need some praise music. And she put on praise music. I had friends that just sat with me and said, let's, you know, you don't have to be out here greeting everybody. Let's go in your room and have some quiet. There were people who took over and planned his memorial service. People came. And then the biggest love notes were those who kept coming. Mm-hmm. The ones who came the week after and the few months after, who remembered big dates, who sent cards, who texted encouragement, who showed up at my kids' ball games to cheer them on, knowing that, you know, they'd look up the stands, their dad wasn't there. So just all those ways, it wasn't any one, but it was, you know, whenever somebody did something that probably to them seemed small in the face of such big loss, but was just a love note. And all of it together felt like the hands and feet of Christ.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. Tell us about your personal grief journey. What were things that kept you, I don't want to say on track, that seems like it's an end goal, but things that kept you maybe focused or disciplined in a routine, or things that would just bring you hope to keep going?
Yeah, that's great, because we do need that. And, you know, these kind of situations can feel like everything's out of control. And yet we do have some responses that we are in control of. We have some choices we can make. And I did not do these like with some big, like, oh, I am going to, just like you said, with such attention or discipline. I was just desperate. I was desperate for hope. And if I did not have kids, I'm not sure if I would have just stayed in bed and pulled the covers up every morning, but I had to show up for them. And so I would kind of get them started in the morning, and then I would get away by myself, and I would get in my minivan. Some people have prayer closets. I have a minivan, and I would get away and just kind of lament in there. I didn't even know that it was actually called lament until much later, but just my natural response was to cry out to the Lord, to audibly cry, to journal out, to give him my fears and my worries, my regrets, my sadness, all of that. And then I would pick up the Bible. So I was reading the Bible through for the year. And I hadn't even started that in January. This was June. Dan had died Father's Day weekend. And after his service, I picked up his journal and his reading plan and just kept going. And so wherever they were in June and July, you know, whatever it was for that day, I didn't go look for verses, but wherever I was, whether I was in Leviticus or Psalms or, you know, Matthew, God would meet me on the pages of scripture, and he would, having poured out my heart to him and laid it all there before him, he would remind me of his character, and he would remind me of his promises. And it was enough hope. It would lift my head enough to go back into the house and show up and parent my kids for that day. It was not enough for the week. I had to go back in the next day and do it again. So that did develop into a pattern. And I came to call it the great exchange, because I could see that I was giving God all of my despair and brokenness and worry every day, and then picking up the word and getting his promises and the reminders of his character and his hope.
Yeah. Was there anything that you did even outside of that? Did you try to keep a routine with appointments, like just everyday appointments, or, you know, working out or drinking water? Was there other things that you tried to kind of do that, I don't want to say that you did before, but just to keep you even more, I don't want to say a part of life, but just checked in, you know, because like you said, it's easy to check out. Was there anything else that you loved to do practically that just felt like you were like still checking in with yourself and keeping that routine kind of going?
You know, I had 7 kids, so I'm not sure any day was routine.
Yeah, of course.
However, I'm not sure, you know, somebody who's super type A would have 7 children, but I did keep running. And that was very helpful, just to get out. I had a favorite trail right outside of our neighborhood. It was a park, and I would get in there and run. I kind of walk run. So, you know, there's that. But it was just, man, I have taken pictures of that trail and thought how much that trail knows about my heart, and how much I would just kind of in my mind work through with the Lord, or, you know, sometimes I would actually audibly talk through, but just getting out and that process. It's funny because I haven't thought about that for a while. You just kind of jogged my memory. But yeah, just getting out and getting, you know, outside and moving my body, that is just hugely helpful to getting, clearing our thinking and getting us those good endorphins, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there are stages of grief, and I would love for you to tell us, can you see the phases in your life looking back? Because maybe you're ahead of somebody in, I don't want to say ahead again, trying to watch my words, but somebody that maybe just happened with the loss of some kind of loss in their grieving, you know, and you've kind of been able to process and work through some things. Can you look back and see the different phases of your healing that the Lord was starting to take you through, and kind of how you begin to see maybe even some of your thoughts change a little bit and your hope come back? Can you share what that began to look like in those kind of phases?
Yeah, I was surprised how, because I'd always heard about the the stages of grief, I was surprised how it just felt like everything together, that it didn't feel neat and tidy and sequential. Like I was necessarily next week going to feel better than I felt this week. That surprised me that it was not linear and that I could have a good day and then just the next day for no apparent reason, just feel like I was pulled down under this pit, you know, of grief. But I learned to recognize those. And what I did find is that, a couple things. One is I was very surprised that joy doesn't come after the hard emotions of grief. I thought it would, you know, that if I could get through all of this hard that I would. But what I found was that joy comes in the midst of it. And there were little pockets of joy. And they were great little, they were like sprinkled in hope that I would feel good again, that everything good wasn't behind us. And then the other thing that really happened is I noticed this pattern of being triggered or pulled down, you know, having a good week and then maybe having a terrible couple weeks. It felt like sometimes one step forward, three steps back. But I did realize when this would come and I could fight through the lies of grief and the lies that our emotions give us in grief, that like life will always feel like this and you'll never feel good again. And everything good is behind you, all of those things. And just focus on doing the work of grief, you know, processing that emotion, knowing that I would pull out of it. And I would wake up one morning with kind of that heavy despair lifted. And those times, those pits of grief for me got less often and they lasted less long. So yeah, that was helpful to know that they would, you know, once they were there and I had been through it a few times, that was not the truth.
I love you sharing that experience because I think so many others can relate to that of feeling like they were in the pit again, or maybe somebody feels in the pit right now and they do believe, well, this is the way life's always going to be and it's not going to be able to change. What I love that you're also addressing is emotions and lies and truth. It reminds me of, I mean, I wrote so much of that in my book, Face Off With Your Feelings, but you have a book all about this. And what would you say your biggest heartbeat in your book is?
It came really in year two. It did not come early. And it was really a perspective shift for me because one day, so for year one, you're just trying to make it through every first birthday and anniversary and Christmas and all these things and get your feet underneath you. The second year that fog is lifted and it's like Groundhog Day all over again. This is my life. And one day I was just journaling with the Lord and I thought, you know, I don't like my life. This is not what I ordered. And I began to immediately following with that, you know, I was writing my journal. I began to realize that this was not God's plan B. That this, even though it was unexpected for me, that God was not consigning me to the leftovers of the life that I had planned, that he does not give us second best, that he hadn't turned his head and now everybody was going on with their best life and I was consigned to the leftovers of mine, that it was chapter two. And as such, by definition, since God had allowed it, it could be filled with as much abundance and good and joy as the days before. And I didn't immediately feel better. It's not like, oh, I'm all better now. But it did give me this, it realigned my perspective so that I could lean hard on that until my emotions caught up and until my heart caught up to that truth.
Yeah. What would you encourage somebody, you know, as we wrap this up? I love practical. I know my audience loves practical. What were some practical things in the healing journey that you would encourage them right now? Somebody, again, that maybe feels in the pit, that has landed in the pit again, or is just feeling that hopelessness. What would you encourage them to do right now?
Yeah, I would say two things. One is to cultivate gratitude. And people had told me this my whole life. I had heard about it, you know, but not until I was desperate in a life that felt bad to see God's goodness did I actually, you know, begin to put pen to paper. And every day I would write like 1 through 7 and I would pause and think back through the day before and look for the small, ordinary, or the big things that God was doing that were just sweet delights, you know, the rain on the roof or, you know, this provision that you brought us. It helped me connect the dots, but it also helped me the more I realized that the more we give God thanks for his goodness, the more he opens our eyes to his goodness. And so we really begin to see that he hasn't left us, that his hand is all on us and around us. And then the other thing that was helpful, the first Christmas we did this, and it just was kind of spontaneous. Again, I was a woman desperate to begin to find my footing and find good in a life that felt bad. I said, we are going to have days of joy. And every day we're going to look for somebody to bless. And I didn't plan it out. I didn't have some big 30-day planner. It was every day I kind of would look in my life and see where it was. And some days it was a coat drive at church or buying, you know, coffee for the person behind me or bringing a wrapped gift for the toy drive. I mean, they were all leaving stuff out for our, you know, the postman, that kind of thing. But every day, I think focusing on that with my kids helped me see all the other need and the suffering around me. Listen, we weren't the only ones hurting. And just helped me turn my eyes off me, because in places of suffering, we can get really self-focused. And we need to. We have so much work we have to do, you know? But we can get caught up in this like cul-de-sac of our own life and our own thoughts. And turning that outward was just so healthy, so helpful.
Thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. I know it's not always easy because people have opinions and, well, why didn't you do this? And, you know, you should have done that. And like you said, the things that people can say to try to make us feel better. So I know when you put your pain out there, it can be hard because people try to, you know, tell you what to do with your pain and how to handle your pain. So thank you for just being courageous and vulnerable to share your story. Where would you like people to go to get your book and hang out with you and spend time with you more?
Thank you, Jessica. So you can find me at my site, which is lisaappolo.com. That's 2 P's, 1 L. You can find all my writing there. That's kind of the hub. But you can find my book anywhere. Hopefully at your local bookstore. You can ask your library to carry it. Or you can find it anywhere online. Amazon, Lifeway, ChristianBooks.com. Mm-hmm.
And what's the title of your book?
It's called Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart.
So good. Thank you again, Lisa, for just being vulnerable and sharing your heart with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.